There was a big election in this country a couple of days back. And we want to take a few moments now to get some first thoughts on the upshot of that rather unanticipated election as far as agriculture and agricultural policy go. Joining us now via phone is a former agricultural economist with K-State Research and Extension, but for several years now has served as the agricultural policy specialist at the University of Nebraska. We talk again with Brad Lubin. And Brad, when you just pause and absorb what took place Tuesday evening into Wednesday morning, obviously dramatic for the country, but there are tangible effects on agriculture eventually, right?
Absolutely. There are some effects here, and this may prove to be a watershed moment for lots of reasons, particularly as anybody listened to the pundits talk about the election results, and suddenly as if about 8 or 9 o'clock on election night, they remember that there's a rural-urban divide out there. And
that was illustrated.
And had sort of forgotten that rural America still has political power and still has political say. So Trump seems to have won, obviously, quite a bit of his support in the rural community. That's not exactly the same thing as the ag community, but obviously there's that big junction of the two. And so there is some thought that the president-elect now looks to the strength that he garnered from rural America and from agriculture in particular, and carries that into office here with a different agenda.
So that divide exposed in the results of the election, the presidential election in particular. While we're on that very topic, do you see that divide working its way into our next round of agricultural policy debate? That is the next farm bill.
Right. That divide is certainly with us as we talk about the farm bill, but maybe with a different sort of outcome than expected. Some of the rural versus urban debate over the last few years since the 14 Farm Bill has been about whether we would or wouldn't try to split food and farm again in the next Farm Bill debate. And yet, who the Republicans eventually nominated, and with Trump's victory, is a candidate that spoke of keeping the two together. And Trump's large group of ag advisors have largely talked about sort of reining in that extreme position of trying to split the legislation to move forward. So there might even be, even though there's this renewed emphasis or maybe renewed strength of the ag and rural sector relative to the urban sector, there is also, I believe, some pragmatism in the agenda about recognizing the role of rural and urban portions of the Farm Bill.
And we will come back to the Farm Bill in just a moment. But staying with the presidency itself, when we heard anything, if anything, about agricultural issues within the realm of the presidential debates and the contest, it had to do with trade. That was the elephant in the room. And the president-elect wants to basically undo long-standing trade agreements and is openly not in favor of the pending Trans-Pacific Partnership, all of which have sounded counter to agricultural interests.
Yeah, that's a big concern for agriculture and, frankly, for all of the economy, for that matter. The big measuring sticks maybe for Trump in the early days and months of his administration would be what he does relative to trade and relative to the regulatory agenda. You heard him obviously also talk about the healthcare policy and federal healthcare reform. Those might be big measuring sticks for what a Trump administration really does look like. But on the trade agenda, Trump's anti-trade rhetoric on the campaign trail leaves one with doubts about how quickly could that sort of rebound into a trade agenda that finds a path forward for TPP or TTIP with Europe. Mm-hmm. And yet, back to that rural versus urban divide, look at the swing states that Trump won, particularly in the industrial Midwest, from Pennsylvania through Michigan and Wisconsin and beyond. A lot of his strength, at least in those states, was shown to be the sort of the traditional blue-collar conservative, but blue-collar worker who historically might have supported more of the labor candidate and the Democratic candidate, but came to Trump. It's hard to win with that base and then immediately move forward on a trade agreement that base is largely against. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to envision an immediate path forward on trade negotiations.
as opposed to abolishing trade agreements already in place and tossing TPP aside, would there be a chance that the new administration would go ahead and perpetuate trade, but under its own terms, so to say?
I think that's arguably the most likely scenario ahead. And Trump, you could sort of consider that Trump considers himself the best negotiator in the world. So any agreement that he didn't negotiate could be improved. Hmm. Now, frankly, we sort of tend to see that from both parties, that neither party trusts the other party to negotiate trade agreements. Nobody who wasn't in the room to negotiate the agreement thinks it's the best agreement. So we can easily find fault with whatever has been already done. Trump may not be so much against trade as he's just against trade agreements that he didn't negotiate. But where does that leave us with TPP, where negotiations have been completed and the agreement's been signed, but it awaits ratification? It's extremely difficult to imagine going back and renegotiating TPP. But it is quite plausible to imagine that a Trump administration and team of negotiators would find a way and a path forward on some side agreement that addresses at least some of the major issues or shortcomings that he has championed about in the trade arena, and find a way to claim victory on that as a pathway for moving the overall agreement forward. That's not unprecedented. That's not entirely different from when the Bush administration negotiated trade agreements with Colombia, Panama, and South Korea, but those agreements sat and waited for congressional action until Obama was elected president in 2008. And what happened? The Obama administration moved forward with some side agreements with each of the individual three countries, sort of as a condition to ratifying the overall agreement. So it's been done before. New administration inherits a previously negotiated agreement. You can't really change the agreement, but you can sort of add additional discussions as a condition for moving forward. And I could see that happening here. Maybe it takes a couple more years now, so it puts a big delay in the process, but it could happen that way.
Time will tell, but a great deal is at stake for agriculture. That's for certain.
You bet.
Future of trade. Now, briefly, Brad, here to the farm bill, and the balance of power in Congress did not change after mm-hmm. Tuesday and early Wednesday. Senate and the House, both chambers are still controlled by the Republican Party. So little change in the players involved in the last farm bill, by and large, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right. If expectations going forward are effectively, you see the same committee structure and the same leadership to push the agenda forward, and that could start pretty quickly. One of the questions going into the new year will be, how quickly does Congress pick up on at least the initial hearings and discussion of what the next farm bill should look like? And will there at least be a Secretary of Ag nominee to be the figurehead, at least for the administration viewpoint on ag policy? Will that person at least be in place as those discussions begin? And will they be in place long enough to at least provide a substantial contribution in the early phases?
And there does seem to be this undercurrent of urgency about maybe moving that farm bill agenda up, like you say, into 2017, given mm-hmm. the state overall of the agricultural economy, which is not great at all.
Right. Clearly, the economic pressure in agriculture does heighten the importance of the safety net negotiations and discussions about the commodity title and the crop insurance title and combined. But as you focus on those, you also have certain commodities that are screaming, might be the appropriate word, but at least communicating loudly about how urgent the need is. Talk to dairy, talk to cotton, and they talk as if there's not an opportunity to wait until 2018. Mm-hmm. But if you start debating some part of the bill early, you effectively begin the debate on the whole bill. It's hard to imagine what can be done in those areas without effectively entering the whole reauthorization process, but those clearly are prods to begin the effort.
There are so many more particulars we could talk about, Brad, but this is going to be a very intriguing next several months on mm-hmm. many fronts, broadly in the political arena, but most assuredly as that arena impacts agriculture.
Well, it's interesting, and one of those always interesting things is if you read the polls that didn't necessarily get the results correctly, but if you read the polls of agriculture producers, you largely got this perspective that they ended up with the candidate they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But we still don't know exactly what that means for agriculture. So it's not the election's over, the politics are done. There's quite a bit of reason to pay attention and stay informed and involved here in the coming months.
Brad, thanks for the quick thoughts post-election on what has developed and what it means to agricultural interests here in the Central Plains and elsewhere. We will surely talk again soon. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
He's an agricultural policy specialist at the University of Nebraska, Brad Lubin.